The following is from page 215 of the printed edition.
The Garinago Respond to the Truth. Beverly Ann Flores, born 1961, baptized 1993. Profile: a Garifuna who accepted the truth and now helps her people learn about Jehovah. The Garinago, plural of Garifuna, trace their ancestry to the early 17th century, when slaves intermarried with indigenous Garib. Garifuna is an Arawakan language with elements of French and Swahili. Garinago religion is a mixture of African and Amerindian traditions with strong Catholic influences. The Dugu, for example, is an elaborate ceremony to appease dead ancestors by offering them food and drink. "My mother did not believe in the Dugu ceremony," says Beverly. "She couldn't see how God could approve of all that food being buried. She used to say, 'Food is for people to eat, and if the dead are loved ones, why would they come back and do you harm?'" Beverly goes on to explain what happened when she learned the truth. "Being a Garifuna motivated me to go to Dangriga to preach to my people. I knew that most Garinago would respond better to one of their own people. Many stop and listen when I speak Garifuna, and several have begun to associate with the congregation. They have seen that they can break away from unscriptural traditions and not be killed by evil spirits." Returning to the account.
No more missionaries allowed. By 1957, the brothers sensed that the government was keeping a close check on the activities of Jehovah's Witnesses in Belize. For example, at a presentation of one of the society's films in Orange Walk, a police officer questioned the brothers from the branch about their time of arrival in the village and the time they would be leaving. He said that this was for a report to the superintendent of police and pointed out that a plainclothes officer was present at a recent assembly to make a similar report. Between 1951 and 1957, 10 more missionaries had been granted permission to enter the country. Suddenly, in June 1957, the brothers received a letter from the police and immigration headquarters stating, "The government of British Honduras, now Belize, has decided that, with immediate effect, no further ministers of your society will be permitted to enter British Honduras from overseas." A request to meet with the governor to ascertain the reason for this decision was denied. Although some other religious groups were not permitted to bring in new missionaries, they were allowed to replace missionaries that left. This provision was not extended to Jehovah's Witnesses, who needed to replace two missionaries. In 1960, the brothers wrote to the authorities in Belize as well as in London, pointing out that they were not applying for new missionaries, but rather requesting replacements. The curt reply was, "The governor in council has reached a firm decision not to permit the entry into British Honduras of any further missionaries of the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society." When the brothers requested an interview, they were told, "The governor and council reached a firm decision in 1957 not to permit the entry into British Honduras of any further missionaries of your society, and in these circumstances, His Excellency does not consider that it would serve any useful purpose for him to see you on this matter." It seemed that the brothers had come up against a stone wall. Finally, after almost 5 years of continual requests, the branch received a letter in October 1961 from the Secretariat in Belize, which said, "I am to inform you that your most recent representations have been considered by the British Honduras government, which has decided that, for the time being, it will permit further foreign missionaries to enter this country as replacements for the existing foreign missionaries who are already here." As a result, in 1962, Martin and Alice Thompson from Jamaica were permitted to enter the country as missionaries. The following is from page 218 of the printed edition.
Jehovah always took care of us. Lily Miller, born 1928, baptized 1960. Profile: she raised 6 children on her own and has been in full-time service for 47 years. In 1959, Amy Bell Allen talked to me about the Bible, recalls soft-spoken Lily. "We had been warned in church about all these false prophets who were going from door to door. I agreed to a study using only the Bible, accepted the truth, and was baptized the following year. At first, it was difficult for me to preach. My hands were trembling so much I could hardly hold my Bible. But my desire to share what I was learning was like a burning fire shut up in my bones, as Jeremiah said. And I had to speak, whether people listened or not. Jeremiah 29. How did Lily raise her 6 children by herself and manage to pioneer? I prayed to Jehovah, and He made it possible, says Lily. 3 times a week, I got up at 3:30 a.m. to make biscuits. My daughters and I baked them in a wood stove, and people lined up to buy them hot out of the oven. After all the biscuits were sold, my children left for school, and I went out in field service. Jehovah always took care of us. Since 1969, Lily has been pioneering in Corozal. Her eldest son and 2 of her daughters have entered the full-time service, and she has had a share in helping 69 people to baptism. Returning to the account.
The work was unhindered. It was obvious that religious opposers had tried to slow down our work, but had they succeeded? The report for the 1957 service year showed a peak of 176 publishers in 7 congregations. Belize had a population of 75,000 people at the time, which means the ratio was about 1 publisher to every 400 people. The 1961 service year report showed 236 publishers, a 34% increase, bringing the ratio to 1 publisher to every 383 people. Jehovah's promise to His people proved true. Any weapon whatever that will be formed against you will have no success, and any tongue at all that will rise up against you in the judgment you will condemn. Isaiah 54:17. The preaching work continued unhindered. Many couples who studied the Bible were living together without being legally married, and some drifted from one partner to another. But as soon as they learned of Jehovah's high standards, many went to great effort and expense to become properly married. Some of them were over 80 years of age. A new kingdom hall is needed. In December 1949, the brothers paid in advance to use Liberty Hall in Belize City for a series of 4 special talks to be held in January 1950. The day before the final talk, an announcement was aired on the radio that the hall was going to be used the next day for the funeral service of a prominent person. Despite several appeals by the brothers to the owners of the hall, the special talk was interrupted by a group of people who entered the hall and loudly started making preparations for the funeral. Eventually, the brothers had to ask the police to intervene. Clearly, the brothers needed a kingdom hall of their own. Available halls were all used as clubs and dance halls, and rent was expensive. Last Sunday night at the Watchtower study, there were 174 present, relates Donald Snyder, serving then as branch overseer. The hall is not able to accommodate nearly that many, so quite a few have to stand. Because it's very crowded, it's hotter than ever. The branch office and missionary home were moved to various rented locations several times. In September 1958, construction began on a 2-story structure. The first floor housed a small branch office and missionary home, while the entire second floor was an auditorium. In 1959, construction was completed, and the Belize City congregation finally had its own kingdom hall. Growth in the Spanish field. One outstanding area of spiritual growth among Jehovah's people in Belize has been among Spanish-speaking people. In 1949, there were places where Spanish was spoken, but none of the missionaries then spoke the language. Later, however, some were sent who could speak Spanish. One of these was Leslie Pitcher, who came in 1955. He was assigned to work in Benque Viejo, a town with a Spanish-speaking population located in western Belize next to the Guatemalan border. When he arrived, some of the locals were already waiting for him. Why was that? About a year before, in the town of San Benito, further west in Guatemala, Natalia Contreras had learned the truth and was baptized. She crossed the border into Belize to witness to her relatives living in Benque Viejo. One of these, Serviliano Contreras, took special note of Natalia's scriptural comments about idol worship, and he accepted the truth. He was a faithful witness until his death in 1998 at the age of 101. Many of his children and grandchildren are witnesses. The territory of the small band of publishers in Benque Viejo in those early days extended across the Guatemalan border to the town of Melchor de Mencos, where they conducted meetings. Eventually, a congregation was formed in Melchor de Mencos, and the Benque Viejo congregation is still known for its zealous spirit. As early as 1956, portions of the district and circuit assembly programs were presented in Spanish. But it was not until February 1968 that a complete circuit assembly program was presented in Spanish at the Kingdom Hall in Orange Walk. There were 85 in attendance, and 4 were baptized. Marcelo Dominguez and Rafael Medina, two Spanish-speaking brothers, along with other Spanish-speaking witnesses, such as Dionisio and Catalina Tech, faithfully attended the meetings and assemblies in English, even though their understanding of the language was limited. It was not until October 1964 that a Spanish-language congregation was formed in Orange Walk with 20 publishers who had been associating with the English congregation. During the 1980s, civil wars were raging in nearby El Salvador and Guatemala, causing many people to flee to Belize. Among them were several Spanish-speaking witness families that included elders, ministerial servants, and pioneers. These boosted the expansion in the Spanish field, as did some bilingual missionaries from other Spanish-speaking countries. True Christians preach from door to door. One day, two strangers knocked on Margarita Salazar's door in Orange Walk and asked, "Do you know one of Jehovah's Witnesses by the name of Margarita Salazar?" The callers, 23-year-old Teofila Mai and her mother, were from August Pine Ridge, a village 21 miles southwest of Orange Walk. Why were they looking for Margarita? "About a year before," explains Teofila, "my 9-month-old son was very ill. So I took him to the village of Botes to dedicate him to a virgin saint known as Santa Clara. I was traveling in the front seat of a truck, and the driver, who lived in our area, began to witness to me. After asking why I was taking my baby to Botes, he told me that the Bible did not approve of image worship. This interested me very much. Over time, this man shared many scriptural truths with me, which he had learned from Jehovah's Witnesses. On one trip," continues Teofila, "the truck driver told me that true Christians preach from door to door. He explained that Jehovah's Witnesses did, and that they would read scriptures such as Zephaniah 1:14 and 2:2 and 3 to people. So taking my small son by the hand and my baby on my arm, I went from door to door in August Pine Ridge, reading these verses to my neighbors. Later, the man suggested that if I really wanted to know the truth, I should study the Bible with Jehovah's Witnesses. He told me about the Salazars and said where in Orange Walk I could find them. I had never been to Orange Walk, so with my mother, I went to look for them." Margarita remembers the morning that Teofila and her mother first visited her. "They asked many Bible questions," she recalls, "and we had a lengthy discussion. They wanted to know if it was true that Jehovah's Witnesses help people understand the Bible, no matter how far they must travel to teach them. I assured her that it was true, and promised that we would go to their village every 2 weeks to study the Bible with them." When Margarita and her husband Ramon arrived at August Pine Ridge, Teofila had gathered 6 adult members of her family for the Bible study. Subsequently, other pioneers from Orange Walk regularly travel the 21 miles of narrow, unpaved, bumpy road with the Salazars to preach in the village while Teofila and her family had their Bible study. Often, Amy Bell Allen stayed overnight in the village so that she could conduct Bible studies there. Teofila was baptized in 1972, 5 months after her first Bible study. A congregation was formed in August Pine Ridge in 1980, and over the years, 37 members of Teofila's family have embraced the truth. Bush trips yield fruitage. Although Belize City and the largest towns in Belize were being worked thoroughly, rural territory was not being covered regularly. Early missionaries had made trips by boat to the southern towns, But later, a road was built that connected the southern districts of Stan Creek and Toledo with the rest of the country. Then, early in 1971, the branch organized annual preaching excursions called bush trips to take the kingdom message to the Mopan and Quechi Maya in remote parts of the Belize rainforest. Using rented vehicles and dugout canoes, the brothers and sisters were able to reach villages and towns from Dangriga to Punta Gorda and as far south as Barranco, near the border with Guatemala. Some trips were made by a group in a van, accompanied by 2 to 4 motorcyclists. Each night they stopped at a different village, and during the day, while the larger group worked the village, the motorcyclists went in pairs up trails to isolated farms. In the Punta Gorda area, the brothers backpacked from village to village. They often had to speak to the alcalde, or chief, in the cabildo, the meeting place for the older men of the village, before preaching to the rest of the villagers. At one village, relates missionary Rainer Thompson, the brothers arrived when the men were in a meeting in the cabildo discussing the procedure for the corn harvest. After the meeting, the men asked the brothers to sing a kingdom song for them. The brothers were tired and hungry, and they did not have a songbook. Brother Thompson adds, they sang with all their hearts, much to the delight of the men. In time, congregations were formed in Mango Creek and later in San Antonio, one of the largest Maya villages. Sometimes we walked between villages at night to keep up with our schedule, explains Santiago Sosa. We learned to walk in single file in the middle of the road, not at the sides, because the bushes along the road were sure to harbor snakes. We also learned to drink from a water vine when we were out of water. Sometimes the group was divided into 2s or 4s to preach in different parts of the village. Then, they all met up again in the evening. 2 would stay behind to do the cooking. That could be a disaster, recalls Santiago with a chuckle, because some didn't really know how to cook. I remember looking at one meal and asking, "What is it?" The cook said, "I don't know, but it's food." If the cook couldn't identify the food, we thought we had better test it first on a skinny stray dog. But even the hungry dog wouldn't eat it. Quechi accept the truth. Rodolfo Cocom and his wife Ofelia moved from Corozal to a remote Quechi village in the south called Crique Sarco. Ofelia had grown up in this village, which the witnesses visited only on the annual bush trips. When she was about 14 years old, Ofelia found the book, The Truth That Leads to Eternal Life, under an orange tree and began to read it. She wanted to know more, but it was not until she was married and living in Corozal that she and her husband, Rodolfo, studied the Bible with 2 special pioneers, Marcial and Manuela Kay. When the Cocoms moved to Crique Sarco in 1981, they wanted to renew contact with the witnesses, so Rodolfo went to Punta Gorda to look for them. A trip that took at least 6 hours on foot and by boat, on both river and sea. In Punta Gorda, he met Donald Nibruji, a pioneer who arranged to study with the couple by correspondence. However, there was a problem. There was no post office in Crique Sarco. At the post office in Punta Gorda, I asked how I could send mail to Crique Sarco, explains Donald. And I was told that the priest went there once a week. So for about 6 months, the priest carried the Bible study correspondence back and forth without realizing that he was acting as a courier for Jehovah's Witnesses. When the priest found out what he was carrying, says Donald, he was quite upset and refused to carry our letters any longer. During those months, Donald made several trips to Crique Sarco to study with the Cocoms. When the next bush trip was made, Rodolfo started out in field service. We took him with us for 4 days, continues Donald, preaching in several villages, and the association with the brothers on that trip really helped him make progress. Ofelia and I would go out to preach in our village, explains Rodolfo, just the 2 of us sharing what we had learned. The people I studied with faced more opposition than we did. Some were denied access to the medicine, food supplies, and clothing that were donated to the village. My mother-in-law was also very opposed to what we were doing. Ofelia and I realized that we wouldn't be able to progress spiritually in Crique Sarco. We needed to attend meetings. Hence, we moved to Punta Gorda to continue studying. There we made spiritual progress and we were baptized in 1985. Today, the Cocoms associate with the Ladyville congregation, where Rodolfo serves as a ministerial servant. The following is from pages 227 and 228 of the printed edition.
Bush Trips, Preaching in the Rainforest. In March 1991, a group of 23 brothers and sisters from all over the country gathered at Punta Gorda for a 10-day preaching adventure in the depths of the rainforest, relates Martha Simons. Included in our load of clothing, blankets, and hammocks was literature in English, Spanish, and Quechua. We also carried food, which included 200 journey cakes or biscuits. The following morning, we set out into a choppy sea in a wooden dugout, made by hollowing out a large ceiba, or cotton tree. At the village of Crique Sarco, we offloaded and set up camp. As the brothers put up the hammocks, the sisters cooked one of our favorite dishes, pigtail boil-up, a stew made from cassava, yams, green plantain, coconut, boiled eggs, and of course, a pig's tail. Word got around that we had arrived, and soon a steady stream of Quechua villagers stopped by to greet us. In this way, we were able to witness to the entire village within 2 hours. That night, the brothers slept in hammocks underneath the police station, which was raised on stilts, while the sisters slept inside a thatched cabildo, the meeting place for the older men of the village. The next day, we loaded up the boat again and went farther up the creek, which in some places was overgrown with mangrove roots that made it dark and eerie. After about half an hour, we disembarked and hiked another hour and a half through the bush to the village of Sundaywood. The people there were small, with dark olive skin and straight black hair. Most of them were barefoot, and the women were dressed in native skirts and wore bead jewelry. The thatched roof houses had dirt floors, no inner partitions, and no furniture, other than hammocks. To one side of the houses was a communal cooking hearth. The people were very friendly, and we found much interest. They were especially impressed with the fact that we had literature in Quechua and could show them scriptures in our Quechua Bibles. The next morning, we were awakened by the roosters, forest birds, and howler monkeys. After a hearty breakfast, we made return visits on all those who had shown interest the day before. We started several Bible studies and encouraged all of them to continue studying on their own until we returned to study with them next year. Subsequent days followed a similar pattern as we penetrated deep into the rainforest to reach remote villages. After 10 happy days in the forest, our minds went over the long distances we had traveled, the many villages we had reached, and all the people we had met. We prayed that Jehovah would protect the seeds of truth we had planted until we returned the following year. Our feet were sore and our bodies were tired, but our hearts were overflowing with thankfulness to Jehovah for the joy of sharing in this year's bush trip. Returning to the account.